was reckless, but Vika had done plenty of reckless things before, and for a great deal less in return. As soon as she made contact with the wooden slats, her chest swelled with warmth, as it had at the masquerade. At the same time, the park around her began to fade. Then, like a watercolor, a new scene filled in. She stood along the Arbat, the main thoroughfare of Moscow, surrounded by opulence. Corinthian columns and intricate mahogany veneers adorned the houses, and women in fashionable gowns strolled arm in arm along the street. The entire city had been rebuilt after its citizens had burned it down to prevent Napoleon from pillaging it. And here Moscow was, shiny and proud and new. It was like being in a dream. Vika could scrape her boots against the dirt, feel the autumn chill upon her skin, even take in the rich smell of mushroom and meat pies wafting in the air. And yet, for all the reality of the scene, the people on the Arbat couldn't see her. When she said hello, they did not greet her. She strolled away from the Arbat and continued walking, until she came to Red Square. She marveled at the white Kremlin walls, and paused to admire the red brick and the cupolas of St. Basil's Cathedral, built to resemble a bonfire rising to the sky. Vika had never been to Moscow, but it was beautiful to behold. After a while, she had gotten her fill of churches and monuments and squares. She was ready to leave Moscow, except... how? It was not as if Nikolai had provided an obvious exit. Her heart pounded faster. She looked all around her, at the people who could not see her, and the city that was too fake to be real, but too real to be feigned. Oh, the devil! It was a trap. He'd finally caught her. Her stupid curiosity had led her here, and now she'd be stuck in Moscow forever. It was even worse than being confined, as Sergei used to say, to the ginny bottle that was Ovchinin Island. Now she was literally trapped on a bench in a dream. A never-ending, lonely dream. But wait. Dreams could be woken from, right? Yes, please, please, please be right. Vika shook her head from side to side and yawned. She stretched her arms above her head and opened her eyes wide. A few seconds later, Moscow began to fade away, and reality and the island came into view again. She exhaled. She was free. And even better, it had not been a trick. Nikolai had not tried to hurt her, just as she had not tried to hurt him with this island. She sighed and leaned back against the bench. Then it dawned on her how incredible it was what Nikolai had created. There were other benches along the promenade. If this first one had been such a glorious rendition of Moscow, what else had he done? She stood and hurried across the gravel path. The benches zigzagged across the promenade, each 50 or so yards from the next, and wandered to the next bench. A subtle fog hung over this one, too. Sea green rather than blue. It also had a brass plaque on it. But instead of Moscow, it was labeled Kostroma. Kostroma was a small city at the junction of the Volga and Kostroma rivers, and famous for the venerable Ipatyevsky Monastery and the Trinity Cathedral, both beloved by the Tsars. Had Nikolai been to all these places? A prick of jealousy twinged inside her. She wanted to sit on the Kostroma bench, but she was still a little skittish from panicking inside Moscow. So she ran down the gravel path to look at the next one instead. Kazan, the largest city in the land of the Tatars, where mosques and Orthodox churches coexisted, and where the Tsar had recently founded the Kazan Imperial University. After Kazan came Samara, then Nizhny Novgorod, seat of the medieval princes, followed by Yekaterinburg on the Ural Mountains, the border of the European and Asian sides of the empire. Vika spun in a circle in the middle of the promenade, looking at all the benches behind and in front of and around her, each with a different plaque and a different, subtle mist about it.
"It's a dream tour of the wonders of Russia," she said aloud.
The next bench was Kiji Island, known for its 22-dome church constructed entirely of shimmering silver-brown wood, each piece painstakingly interlocked at the corners with round notches or dovetail joints. Legend had it that the builder used only one axe to construct the entire church, and when finished, tossed the axe into the nearby lake and declared that there would never be another axe like it. Now that one, she would sit on. Maybe after she'd seen all the others. Vika was sure she could spend hours on Kiji Island. Next came benches for the crystal-clear waters at Lake Baikal in Siberia, the glacier-capped Mount Elbruz in the Caucasus Mountains, and the Valley of Geysers on the Kamchatka Peninsula. The second-to-last bench was not a historically significant location. It was not a particularly populous one, either. It was not as stunning as Lake Baikal, or Mount Elbruz, or the Kamchatka Peninsula, and hardly anyone knew it existed. But these were Nikolai's benches. He was the final arbiter of what qualified as a wonder of Russia. And he had decided this would be the penultimate one.
"Oh!"
Vika pressed her hand to her necklace. A golden mist shimmered around the bench, as if swathing it in autumn sunset. It was of Chinan Island. She reached out and traced the brass plaque with her finger, following each engraved letter from beginning to end. She did this twice, and then she lowered herself onto the bench. All apprehension from the Moscow bench disappeared at the anticipation of this next dream. As soon as she sat, the garden once again faded away, and when the fog burned off, a birch forest encircled her, and wolverines and foxes and pheasants cavorted at her feet.
"Home,"
she whispered. She hiked through the woods to a break in the trees, and looked out over the Neva Bay. Nikolai had captured the view of St. Petersburg from Ovchinin Island flawlessly. He had also included her new island, a small isle of green in the middle of the deep blue bay. She smiled, but knitted her brow at the same time. It was an odd sensation, to know that she was actually on that island, and yet to feel that she was somewhere else, on the outside looking in. She continued hiking, pushing her way through overgrown shrubbery and crossing a log over Preobrazhensky Creek. She came to the clearing where she'd emerged from the fire, where Nikolai and Pasha had first seen her. In Nikolai's dream version, the trees still smoldered, and thin plumes of smoke trailed from the singed trunks into the sky. There were also two patches of ice on the forest floor, with two pairs of footprints embedded in them, still fresh, as if the boy standing there had recently fled. Vika laughed. How funny! The details he'd included just for her. But what she wanted to see most was her house. Now that she was back on Ovchinin Island, or the daydream of the island, the yearning for home that she'd been suppressing bubbled to the surface and propelled her toward the last hill of the forest. She began to run as fast as she could. As she ascended the hill, however, her vision started to blur. She tried to push onward, but the haziness continued, and although her feet moved, the setting remained the same and her progress halted. It was as if she ran the same spot on the hill over and over again. Ah, this was the edge of Nikolai's knowledge, the perimeter of the Ovchinin Island he'd created. He had never been to her cottage, so he couldn't include it in his dream. All he could conjure was what he had personally seen, and what he could embellish from his experience. Vika stood another minute longer at the base of the hill, then shook herself awake, and out of the scene before too much disappointment could set in. It was still a marvel what Mikolai had created. She couldn't fault him for failing to include her home. And perhaps it was better that her house remained absent, for soon the people of St. Petersburg would be here on the island, sitting on these benches and walking through these same dreams. She wouldn't want them opening the cabinets and drawers in her house, even if they were imaginary. There was only one more bench left on the promenade. Vika rose and approached it slowly, even considering whether she ought to go back to the beginning and sit on each of the other benches before she came to the end. But she was already here. She sped up to discover what the final bench held. She stopped short when she saw it.
No!
Nikolai lay limp across the final bench, one arm falling off the seat and dragging on the ground, and Vika dashed over, visions of her tea leaves flashing through her head.
Death is coming soon,
Renata had said, but Vika hadn't thought it would be this soon. She shook him, but he didn't react, and his chest didn't rise and fall as it should have. There was no breath puffing out into the chilly morning air. His dark hair fell in disarray across his face. How much energy had it taken him to create the dream state benches? All of it?
Nikolai!
She touched her hand to his cold cheek. But then his eyelashes fluttered, and Vika gasped as she was towed into another dream. Chapter 42. Nikolai was watching a golden eagle fly across a vast plain when Vika appeared beside him.
Nikolai!
He turned and blinked at her. Her voice seemed too loud in the quiet of the savannah. He took several steps back.
Vika? How are you here? The bench. I thought you were dead. I touched you, and it brought me. I'm not dead.
She exhaled and touched her scar.
Thank goodness.
The walls he'd erected around his heart crumbled a little. He tried to remind himself that she was his opponent, but it was difficult when she was right there.
I'm definitely not dead, but I think I'm still asleep.
She looked around her and took in the surroundings.
You're creating these benches in your sleep.
He nodded.
Amazing. Then this is a dream, too. Where are we? The Kazakh steppe. It's beautiful.
His walls crumbled further. Nikolai knew he was being foolish, but like at the masquerade, he felt no desire to rebuild them. She was here. She'd been worried he was dead. He shoved aside the warnings blaring in his head.
See the eagle?
He pointed upward at the stately bird soaring across the sky, with its golden brown wings outspread.
This is a special type of falconry. If you look carefully, you can see the eagle's master, the bear Kutchi, on his horse near the base of the mountain.
Vika squinted in the direction Nikolai was pointing. She nodded when she saw the stout man on horseback.
Yes, I see. I can barely make him out, but he's there.
The eagle glided above them without a sound. It flapped its wings on occasion, but mostly used the wind to carry it across the clouds.
There are many animals on the island where I live, Vika said. They bring me their stomach aches and broken bones. To heal.
Vika nodded, eyes still on the eagle in the sky.
I can do it if it's not too complicated a wound. A clean break or a straight cut.
Nikolai shook his head.
I didn't know enchanters could also be faith healers. I'm impressed.
She shrugged.
I don't think I'm a faith healer. They work with shifting energy, right? But what I do is different, and certainly based in magic. I imagine it's a bit like sewing. Matching up the fabric and the threads, lining up the flesh and the veins, although I'm wretched at creating clothes.
Your masquerade gown was not wretched.
it also wasn't fabric.
She smiled. Nikolai had to concede that she was right. They watched the eagle as it soared farther across the plains. Vika turned her head to follow it.
I like this dream. The eagle hunting is stunning. This bench may be your best one.
Thank you. There's actually an old Kazakh proverb that says, there are three things a real man should have. A fast horse, a hound, and a golden eagle.
Vika wrinkled her nose.
And what about a real woman?
Nikolai laughed.
A real woman should have those things too.
She watched as the eagle continued to glide over the steppe.
How do you know all this? How did you create all those benches? Surely you haven't traveled to each of the places you conjured. Unless you can evanesce there.
Her eyes widened. Nikolai began to walk through the long, dry grass, and Vika followed.
No, I can't evanesce at all. I've tried. However, I have spent a great deal of time in libraries over the years, and I've also heard many stories from Pasha of his and his father's travels, both abroad and within the empire. I gleaned all these details from them. Yet I cannot claim that my dream depictions are entirely accurate. I admit to taking a fair amount of artistic license, for much of what I have to base things on are paintings. But there are a few places I have actually been. Moscow, your island, and here.
You've been to the steppe? But how? It's so far from St. Petersburg.
Nikolai pulled on a strand of hair, which was neatly combed, in contrast to the tired mess on his head on the other side of this dream.
Can you not tell from the near black of my hair, or the shape of my eyes? The steppe is where I was born.
You're Kazakh?
My mother was. She was a faith healer in one of the tribes, but she died when I was born.
And your father?
Russian, but I never knew him.
Vika turned her eyes back up into the sky.
I never knew my mother.
Nikolai stopped and looked at Vika.
I'm sorry. Thank you, but it's all right. I've had my whole life to get used to it. I understand.
And he did, entirely. She began to walk again. Nikolai watched as her dress swayed with each step, brushing against the tall grass. The brittle blades so high they rose almost to her hip. There were few girls he knew in Petersburg society who could traipse through the savannah without complaining about the burrs snagging their skirts or the dry wind mussing up their hair. But those thoughts didn't even seem to occur to Vika. She was a mythical creature among ordinary humankind. She turned around to wait for him.
Is there more?
More what?
More of this dream.
He nodded. She held out her gloved hand.
Show me.
A smile began to spread across Nikolai's face, but he tamped it down. She was tempting. Too tempting. And that was dangerous. He could enjoy her company for now, but he had to remember this was part of the game. Still, he jogged to catch up, and when he reached her, he took her outstretched hand. He momentarily forgot how to breathe. Her touch, even through their gloves, resonated to that ethereal part of his core he could only describe as his soul. He suspected that even his real body, asleep on the bench, warmed as her hand clasped his. She blushed and looked at their entwined fingers, but she didn't unlace them.
Come this way,
he said, when he'd gathered himself. Nikolai led her farther into the grassland, creating more of the dream as they trekked. He hadn't planned to expand this setting beyond watching the eagle hunting for prey. But then again, he hadn't accounted for Vika appearing in the dream with him and wanting to know more about his past. So now, as they walked, he filled out the landscape. not only stretching the barren plains and the mountains in the background, but also generating a yurt village in the near distance. As they approached, a herd of sheep came into view, as well as a smaller herd of yaks some men on horseback were bringing home from pasture. There were boys there, too, about Nikolai's age, and for a second, longing flared inside him, desiring their simple existence. But then he remembered the reality of his life on the steppe, the looks of disdain and fear from the members of his tribe, and even the outright pretending he did not exist. No, Nikolai could never have been one of them. He and Vika passed the animals unseen, although they could see and smell and hear everything around them, from the pungent scent of the livestock to the Zhaubarek kebabs roasting over the fire. A group of boys marched past, each carrying a younger boy on his shoulders, and singing,
Ak Sandik, Kok Sandik.
Nikolai almost started humming along before he caught himself.
Are these memories from your childhood?
Vika asked.
Yes. Do you miss it?
Nikolai shrugged.
I think I see the past more kindly than it treated me.
She quirked a brow.
How do you mean?
I mean, when I was here, they didn't know what to do with me. Although my mother had some abilities as a faith healer, they were very different from the things I could do. And without a proper teacher to show me how to hone my skills and to discipline me, all I did was wreak havoc on the village.
How?
All sorts of nonsense. I'd mute the dombras, their guitar-like instruments, while the men tried to play music. Or I'd turn the other children's suppers from rice into sand. Things like that.
Vika laughed.
It sounds amusing.
Yes, well, the villagers didn't think so. They tried to beat the magic, the demons, out of me. They were glad when Galina came and took me away. What I have here in this dream, however, are the good parts I recall.
They walked into the center of the village, past yurts with elaborate wooden crowns and walls covered in bright embroidered fabric. There were lions and tigers and garudas stitched on the yurts, symbols of power, as well as pictures of fire, water, and earth, the elements of the universe. The village was a riot of colors and patterns.
I understand why you think fondly of this place, Vika said,
as they neared a group of women cooking skewered meat over a fire.
Even if they didn't know what to make of you.
The wood crackled, and a log broke, sending up a plume of smoke. It smelled like charred memories. Then the wind blew the smoke away, and left behind only the glowing embers.
But I'm also glad the Countess found you, Vika said.
Nikolai blushed, but it receded quickly. It was possible Vika didn't mean it the way he'd first interpreted, and that was why he was supposed to keep up the walls to protect himself. She stopped walking.
Are you glad for the game?
She asked. Nikolai stumbled. Vika gripped him tighter and held him up so he wouldn't fall. Like when they'd met at Bolshevnoi Duplo, only with their roles reversed. Nikolai wished, for a moment, that he could keep falling, and she could keep catching him. But they couldn't. He stood, and she released his hand, so he could brush the dirt off his trousers.
Thank you, he said.
She nodded, but she did not reach for him again. Rather, she looked at him as if she expected something else. All he wanted was her hand again, that quickening of his pulse when she touched him. But he answered her question instead.
No, I am not at all glad for the game. Are you?
Vika chewed on her lip as she considered. Finally, she said,
Yes, I'm glad for it. I both love and hate it, which, I think, means I both love and hate myself. I am the game.
and the game is me. This is what my whole life has led up to, and this will determine the rest of it.
Nikolai sighed. He knew she was right, despite these fleeting moments of peace they seemed to have. They would both continue to play the game to win. His entire existence had been built upon fighting for this, fighting against powerlessness, fighting to be somebody who couldn't be ignored, and he wouldn't give up so easily. He suspected Vika felt the same way. If only he'd never started calling her by her name. But who was he kidding? He would have been drawn to her whether he'd said her name or not. Their enchantments might be pitted against each other, but they were also part of the same magic, part of the same whole. It would make winning so much more bittersweet. At that thought, the dream around them vanished suddenly. Nikolai found himself crumpled on the bench, with Vika kneeling at his side.
"What happened?" she asked. Nothing. I lost my grip."
Nikolai pushed himself upright. But unlike in the dream world, fatigue saturated him, and he could hardly keep his eyes open.
"The benches have taken a great deal out of you," Vika said. "Why didn't creating the island do that to you?"
He wanted to ask, but he was so thoroughly exhausted, his mouth couldn't form the words.
"You should rest," Vika said. "I'll sleep on the bench,"
Nikolai managed to whisper.
"No, people will be coming to the island soon. After all, you made a dock that invited them. You should rest in your own bed."
"It's too far."
"Not as far as you think."
She laid her hand on his arm, and again he warmed at her touch.
"Sleep well, Nikolai. You deserve it."
"I..."
But he didn't get the chance to finish, because she pushed him gently, and he exploded and imploded all at once. His eyes flew open as the world went completely white, and for an instant, he thought she had finally killed him. But she had turned him into... bubbles? He rematerialized a few seconds later, and his vision pieced itself together. He was standing at the steps outside the Zakrevskys' house.
"Vika?"
It took a minute for Nikolai to realize what had happened. He had been a person, and then he'd dissolved, then come back together again.
"Mon Dieu! She evanesced me!"
He shook his head and stumbled. His reconstructed hand shook as he tried to charm open the front door. She was so powerful. She had evanesced him all the way home. Chapter 43. Curtain rings scraped along their metal rod. Drapes parted, and the midday sun blazed into Nikolai's room, straight into his face. Renata stood over his bed.
"Ah, what are you doing?"
He buried his face in his pillow.
"You need to get up."
"What time is it?"
"It's almost 3 in the afternoon.
"But how did you get in here?"
"You forgot to lock the door."
"What?"
Nikolai rolled over and stared at his bedroom door. The 5 locks were indeed undone. How had he forgotten? He never forgot, even when it was only a single lock. Not since Renata had discovered him in the midst of magic 2 years ago. Then he remembered the island and the benches, and it made some sense that he drowsed asleep without flipping the deadbolts. He flopped back onto his pillow.
"You're falling to pieces, Nikolai."
"Am I? I appear to be rather intact."
He held out his arm to prove it, which, however, reminded him of Vika evanescing him, and he drew his arm back close to his body. But perhaps he had fallen to pieces after all. Only she had put him back together. this time.
You know what I mean.
Renata set a tray on the table by his bed. On it was a pot of tea, a section of baguette next to a dish of butter and jam, and a tiny pastry shaped like a swan. The swan swam in a dish of butterscotch. It literally swam.
What is this? Ludmila gave it to me. I mentioned you were ill, and she sent me home to nurse you, with this as medicine. Of course, that was hours ago. Lucky the swan isn't real. Its poor legs would have broken off from exhaustion by now.
Nikolai jolted up in bed.
How could you bring this here?
Renata frowned.
What do you mean? It's only breakfast. Well, afternoon tea now. And I... Oh. Oh, no.
Her eyes grew wide.
Precisely. It was enchanted by Vika, so I shouldn't have been able to bring it past the front door. Let alone into my room. What happened to your protections?
Nikolai fell back against his pillows.
I fear I'm too weak to keep them up. But the game, if you're not strong enough...
Renata stared at him, her mouth downturned. He sensed the conversation was about to take a sad turn. But Nikolai didn't want to talk about dying. Not again.
Could I have some tea? Of course.
Renata poured a cup for him.
You won't read the leaves.
I won't read the leaves.
Nikolai nodded, although he did not drain the cup, just in case.
Do you want the swan?
Renata asked.
Or should I decapitate it or something?
The edge of Nikolai's mouth turned up, a hint of a smile.
No need for violence. But I can't eat it. I shouldn't. Who knows what would happen if I ingested her magic?
Yet there was a warmth in the pit of his stomach, a visceral desire to taste Vika's magic, even if it poisoned him. He picked up the baguette and took a bite of it to smother the yearning. Renata pushed the swan farther away.
Nikolai, there is something I need to tell you. I read her leaves 2 days ago.
You what? He sat up on the edge of his bed and almost knocked over the entire tray. He tossed the rest of the baguette onto its plate.
When? Why didn't you tell me? I haven't had a chance to. You've either been asleep or gone. Vika paid a visit to the pumpkin and asked me to. What did they say? Or do I not want to know?
Renata stared at the carpet.
Oh, Nikolai, there was a knife in the inner circle. Death is coming for one of you soon.
She flung herself at him and buried her face against his neck. So much for not talking about dying. He wrapped his arms around Renata to soothe her, but he looked at the slim drawer of his desk, where the knife Galina had given him rested, biding its time. The dagger that would not miss.
I don't want either of you to die,
Renata said into his collarbone, her breath hot right above his scar.
But especially not you.
She held him tighter.
I love you.
Nikolai pulled back. Renata's bottom lip quivered as she held her arms out, not quite releasing their embrace, even though he'd already broken away.
Renata, you mean so much to me, but... But what? You shouldn't love me. It isn't wise. There's no wisdom in love.
She watched him, her eyes rimmed with red.
But you love her, don't you?
Nikolai said nothing.
You've loved her since the first time you saw her.
No, but that could not be true. Falling in love with Vika would mean a complete loss of control, and Nikolai did not lose control. It would also mean he'd given in to someone else, and he would not and could not trust someone else so entirely. It had always been himself, on his own. No one else was dependable. No one else would put his interests first.
Renata, you're one of my best friends.
Nikolai reached for her, but she stood from the bed and backed away.
I'm sorry,
he said. She gathered his tray.
You don't need to apologize. It was silly of me to hope. I knew it all along.
It's better for you not to love me. I'm doomed whether I live or die.
You don't need to be a part of that. It doesn't matter, Nikolai. You're a part of me, whatever the outcome. If you die, a part of me dies. If you live but suffer over guilt from the game, then I suffer as well.
I am very sorry for that.
She shook her head.
I'm not.
She took the tray of dirty dishes and strode to the door.
I don't regret loving you, Nikolai. It's always been in my leaves. And I wouldn't trade it for another cup.
She opened the door and slipped out to the hall. Nikolai looked after her long after she had gone. He did not relock his door. Chapter 44. The Tsarina had been unwell for quite some time. This Pasha knew, as he heard his mother muffling coughs into handkerchiefs at supper, seen her retire earlier and earlier from state functions, and watched her once regal presence wilt into a near non-existent one. Yuliana had commented on the Tsarina's wan complexion as well, and Pasha himself had caught her once when she fainted during a stroll in the gardens. Now Pasha strode into the small chamber his mother used for conducting business, the same room through which he'd sneaked the night of the ball, having been summoned by the Tsarina in the middle of his meeting with the Spanish ambassador.
You wish to see me, mother?
Pasha asked as he strode up to the Tsarina's desk. He took her gloved hand and kissed it.
Yes, darling.
There was no one else in the room but some of her attendants, and she waved them out.
I apologize for interrupting your meeting. This may be the only moment I have free before I leave.
No apology necessary. The Spanish ambassador is a pompous boor, and father had me meet with him only to keep the Spaniards out of his own hair.
But did you say you're leaving? Where to? Are you sure you're fit to travel?
Pasha dragged a chair from the opposite side of the desk and set it next to his mother's. When he sat down, he took her hands and clasped them in his lap.
The doctor has deemed it advisable to move me to warmer weather, now that October is ending and the chill has arrived. Your father and I shall depart for the south in 2 days' time.
48 hours' notice? Why the rush?
She frowned.
Your father has urgent business to which he must attend in the Crimea.
Trouble with the Ottoman Empire?
Yes, the situation is worsening.
The wrinkles on her forehead pinched, making her look even more worn down.
He wants to see it for himself. You'll take care of the city and your sister while we're gone, will you not?
Yuliana does not need taking care of.
The Tsarina laughed then, and her wrinkles unpinched. But her laughter was punctuated with hacking coughs. Pasha winced. She waved off his concern with her handkerchief.
I shall see you soon. All right?
All right.
Pasha kissed his mother's hand again. For what could he say? She was his mother. But she was also the Tsarina, and other than the Tsar, the Tsarina had the final word.
Now, if you will help me up, I need to check on how the staff is handling my luggage.
He stood up and pulled her up. She needed a second to steady herself. And then he led her out of the room, into the hall. She clung to him for support the entire way to her rooms. Pasha rode toward the island with long, even strokes. It was not hard to know where to go. The island was lit with twinkling lanterns, luminescent against the black sky. He had been back to the island only once. The Tsar had been trying his hardest to keep Pasha occupied. But unlike the first time, Pasha's second visit had been crowded, since the new dock allowed the rest of St. Petersburg access. And everyone had known he was the Cesarevich, for his guard had accompanied him. It was impossible to enjoy the dream benches when he knew everyone would watch him. And besides that, Gavril had refused to allow the Cesarevich to fall under the influence of hallucinatory drugs. Pasha shook his head, as if the benches could be explained so simply. But the people of St. Petersburg had convinced themselves that the colorful mists surrounding each bench were hallucinogens, and then they'd shown a surprising willingness to throw themselves into the experience anyway. That in itself, thought Pasha, could be construed as magic. He laughed aloud at the memory of the crowds of ordinary staid Petersburgers, packing themselves 10 people to a bench. But at least now, in the middle of the night, Pasha would have the island to himself. Or so he thought. When he rode up to the dock, there was something else tied to the pier. It was not a boat, per se, but rather a leaf. A yellow birch leaf with its edges turned up, enlarged to the size of a small boat. "Vika," he whispered. He leaped out of his own skiff and secured it to the pier. Of course, it could be the other enchanter who was here, but Pasha had a feeling it was Vika. It was a birch leaf at the dock, and Vika came from an island covered in birches. It had to be her. He ran toward the main path, leaving his dignity at the dock, the gravel crunching under his boots as he approached the promenade. The lanterns appeared to dance with the leaves in the breeze, the moonlight somehow not detracting from their brilliance, but adding to it. Pasha emerged from the trees to the center of the island, and it was there that he stopped short, on the walkway lined with benches. Vika sat on the bench for Ovchinen Island. Pasha slowed as he walked toward her, so that he would not startle her with his presence. But she didn't look up, even though his boots seemed to pound on the path, no matter how lightly he tried to tread, and he knew she must be immersed in a dream. He hovered. He could sit next to her, and perhaps join her. He didn't know if each person had their own separate dream, or if you shared the same vision on the same bench. Of course, if he sat down, it might surprise her, and he had been attempting to avoid that all along.
"It's a tad eerie of you to stand there and watch me sleep," Vika said, her eyes still closed.
Pasha jumped. Ironic that he had been the one trying not to startle her. She opened her eyes and smiled. Pasha recovered himself and bowed.
"It's a pleasure to see you again, Vika. And you as well, Pasha."
He straightened.
"How did you know I was here?" "I have a knack for sensing anomalies in my magic."
"Ah, so I am an anomaly. And the benches are yours, not the other enchanters."
She laughed.
"Oh, goodness, no to both. You're an anomaly only to the extent that you are not my magic. And thus I can feel when you, or anyone, is there, if I so choose. And the benches are not mine. The island, yes. But the benches, I couldn't create something so magnificent."
"I would venture to say the island itself is quite magnificent."
"Thank you."
Vika stood and straightened her skirt.
"I'm rather pleased with it myself."
"Is that your leaf at the dock?"
Pasha pointed in the direction from which he'd come.
"Yes, I've been experimenting with different modes of transportation. Do you like it?"
Very much. I could make one for you.
I think Gavril would die of fright. Vika tilted her head.
Gavril?
The captain of my guard. He doesn't like it when I try new things. A boat made of a leaf, I think, may push him to the limits of his tolerance.
You may assure him it is entirely safe.
I have no doubt. Perhaps I ought to send him out on the leaf first, to prove its sturdiness. Vika laughed, and Pasha did too. She sparkled like the lanterns under the moonlight.
Have you tried the benches? She asked.
No. Gavril wouldn't let me when so many people were around during the day. Have you been through all the dreams?
Yes, and some more than once. They are all astounding.
Pasha glanced over his shoulder at the benches he had passed on his way to Vika.
Which is your favorite, besides the obvious?
He dipped his head toward the Ovchinan island bench on which she sat.
The step,
she said, without pause.
Interesting.
I have a friend who is originally from the step.
You met him, actually, at the ball. Nikolai. He was the harlequin.
Vika paused, and for a moment she seemed as frozen as her dress had been that night. But then she was herself again.
Right, the harlequin. I think I remember him. Remarkable dancer.
Indeed. He is always popular with the girls at balls. Pasha watched her closely for her reaction.
Is he?
Vika's expression remained even and bland. It was as if she were neither impressed nor unimpressed, as if Nikolai wasn't memorable to her at all. Pasha exhaled.
But enough about Nikolai. Could we sit on the bench with the step dream? Would you show me around?
Vika furrowed her brow.
Actually, if you don't mind, I was rather fancying a walk. I've been sitting here for a while. Or if you'd rather have some time alone with the benches.
No, a walk sounds perfect. Pasha offered her his arm, and she linked hers through his. They strolled down the rest of the promenade, past the last bench, the one that contained the dream of the step, and turned left onto another path.
Why did you come to the island in the middle of the night?
Vika asked.
To experience it without Gavril watching. And how did you escape his watch? I would think a Cesarevich would be closely guarded.
They try, but I know secret passageways in and out of the palace of which they are unaware. In general, they don't report my absences, for at best they would appear to be fools, and at worst they would be disgraced and lose their positions. So in exchange for them forgetting on many occasions to inform my father when they lose track of me, I return unscathed each time.
A risky bargain, but I suppose I understand. You haven't answered my other question, though. Why are you here?
I may ask the same of you.
I couldn't sleep.
Nor could I. They walked on for a while without speaking. Vika looked up at the lanterns, while Pasha took pleasure in the weight of her arm against his. There were many layers of cloth that separated them, but he swore his skin tingled at her touch anyway. His pulse definitely thrummed faster. It was a welcome distraction from worrying about his mother. When they turned onto another path, this one, Pasha recalled, led to a grove of maple trees. Vika said,
"You have a great deal on your mind."
Pasha started. It was the second time she had surprised him in half an hour.
Are you also a mind reader? No, I hate to tell you, but your face gives everything away. There's so much tension in your jaw, and you have a groove chiseled into your forehead, not to mention your hair. Do you always pull it when you worry?
Pasha shook his head.
You are remarkable. Merely observant,
He sighed as they stepped into the maple grove.
It's just that my mother is very ill, Pasha said. It has been one thing after another, and the doctors are at their wits' end. Their last hope is to send her to the south, in hopes the warmer weather will do her good. I love her dearly, so I too hope it is the cure. But the truth is, I doubt it. Her problems began long before autumn arrived.
Pasha released Vika's arm and began to pace along the path. He thought of his mother's life. It had not been easy to live in the Winter Palace with his father. The Tsar had had many well-known affairs. Other children born by other women. The Tsarina could have left and taken Yuliana with her. But Pasha would have had to remain behind as official heir to the throne. As such, his mother had stayed and abided a mountain of insult and indignity for the love of her son.
I wish there were some miracle that could heal her. Are you asking me to use magic on her?
Vika asked. Pasha stopped his pacing, hope caught in his throat.
Can you?
Vika exhaled slowly and rubbed a spot just under the collar of her coat. She took several more breaths before she replied.
I can heal cuts and broken bones, but what ails your mother sounds much deeper. I think I'd do her more harm than good. Oh, I'm sorry. Magic is not always the answer. It's old and very complicated, and comes tied with many strings. Even this.
She tapped the knot of the maple tree, which began to pour amber liquid into a bucket below.
One of Ludmila's innocent ideas has consequences greater than syrup.
What do you mean? Vika pointed up at the branches of the maple. The green leaves that swayed in the wind began to blur, then vanish. They were replaced by dead limbs.
What? How did you do that? The leaves are a mirage. These trees have actually been drained completely of life.
In order to create one thing, you had to sacrifice another.
Yes. Sometimes magic is deadly.
She frowned. Pasha eyed her.
Are you telling me you're dangerous?
Vika's frown vanished, and she laughed, almost too wildly, given what they'd just been talking about.
Quite so, but I'm no danger to you.
The moon shifted then, and its light slivered through the bare maple branches and landed in pale stripes on Vika's face. It highlighted her delicate cheekbones. It emphasized her otherness. Pasha couldn't resist stepping closer to her. He reached out to touch her face.
Please don't,
she whispered.
I'm sorry, I just...
She didn't move away as his fingers hovered next to her cheek, aching to brush against her skin. But she said,
I mean, you don't want this. What if I do?
He wanted to kiss her, and not just her lips, although he wanted that badly. He also wanted to kiss her neck, to peel away her coat and touch his mouth to her pale shoulders. He wanted to feel the softness and warmth of her skin. Pasha leaned closer. This time, Vika backed away.
Trust me, you don't. I'm too complicated. I am bound by too much not in my control.
Pasha sighed. He too was bound. By his father. By duty. By the people of an entire empire. He wondered what trappings hindered Vika.
There's no such thing as simplicity, he said.
She took off her glove and ran a finger through the trickle of maple syrup, frowning at the crystallized lumps in it.
I'm beginning to fully comprehend that. I like you, he said. More than like you.
She shook her head slightly, but more to herself than to him.
I don't want to like you.
But you do? Pasha went to run his hand through his hair, but caught himself before he gave his nerves away.
Doesn't everyone? I'm only asking about you.
Vika focused on a deformed crystal of syrup on her thumb.
I'm not in a position to fall in love. With you or with anyone else?
If he could, Pasha would have sucked the sugar off her finger. But it wasn't appropriate, and she'd made it clear she wasn't interested. So he settled for removing his glove and wiping the sugar crystal off her fingertip, lingering for a second as their hands touched. Even that sent sparks through every one of Pasha's nerves.
Will you tell me if that ever changes?
He said, his voice a touch hoarse. She frowned.
I doubt it will. But if it does...
She looked up at Pasha, and it took everything in him not to bend down and steal a kiss.
Yes, she said. If it changes, I will tell you.
He sighed again.
You have a lot weighing on you, Vika said. I'll leave you to enjoy the island and sort through your troubles. I hope for the best for your mother.
You don't have to go.
But she had already vanished. How? Now Pasha allowed his hand to run through his hair. It was the third time in an hour she had startled him. He dashed to the other end of the island, to the pier. And there she was, already halfway across the bay on her leaf. He watched her all the way until she made it to the opposite shore. She was unlike any girl he had ever known, and likely would ever know. His nerves were still on edge from their encounter. He started to head back toward the main promenade, perhaps to sit on the step bench or the Ovchinen Island one. Vika was right. Pasha did have a great deal to ponder. But as he walked, he turned to look at the water one last time. She was gone, but her presence was not. Tied to the dock was a gift, his own enchanted leaf. Chapter 45. In his study, the Tsar pored over his maps of the Crimea, as well as his general's most recent reports on the activities of the Ottomans. It was as Yuliana had warned. He should have made this trip south a while ago. There was a gentle knock from the hall, followed by a cough, weaker yet louder than the knock. The Tsar hurried to open the door. The Tsarina smiled and coughed again into her handkerchief.
Elizabeth, my dear,
the Tsar said, offering his arm and leading her to the armchair by his desk.
Why are you here? It's late. You ought to be in bed.
She wore a white dressing gown with lace at the collar and sleeves. Her hair was swept up in a loose bun. When younger, she'd been known as one of the most beautiful women in Europe. But even now, older and ill, she was arresting.
I just wanted to see you, love, she said.
The Tsar kissed her on the top of her head. He had disregarded her for decades. They had married too young, when he was 15 and she only 14, and the Tsar had openly had many affairs. But age had worn him down, as had politics and too many wars, and in the end, it was Elizabeth he wanted. She had been regal and patient through everything, and when he came back to her, she forgave him his trespasses right away. The Tsar was not so kind to himself.
I am looking forward to the Sea of Azov with you, he said.
As am I, love. You deserve the rest.
There is no rest for the Tsar, but at least I will be with you.
Elizabeth nodded, but then she coughed into her handkerchief again.
Are you all right?
Yes.
She wheezed as she drew in a shallow breath and devolved into another fit of coughing, so deep Blood sputtered from her throat.